FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome, and you are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Carrie Lutz. It's 8:28:18. Well, the move is complete. The new studio's up. We're putting in some more equipment, so the video is going to be forthcoming. You know, when I do things, I have to have great production values. Can't do stuff half-assed. It's just not my nature. Hey, as always, we invite you to join the dialogue. I'm about 100 emails behind right now, but I'll crank them out over the next couple of days. So the email address is kl@carrielutz.com. Hey, if you're listening on YouTube, click that subscribe button and that ringer so you get notified whenever we post a new show. Well, talked a lot about the gold standard, about precious metals, why they're so important, why they're not barbarous relics. And when I was in Freedom Fest, had the pleasure of sitting at a table for the awards, for the cinema awards dinner, which I never went to before, and met a well-known individual by the name of Nathan Lewis. And Nathan, you're formerly a chief economist, and you provided advice to institutional investors. Now you run a private investing partnership in my former home state of New York. And we've seen your work all over the place, Financial Times, Asian Wall Street Journal, Huffington Post. I mean, I could go down the list, which I won't, but you've written three books about the gold standard. So for all of you out there who are really concerned about the concept of money, I figured Nathan would be a great person to have on the show. So welcome to the show.
Hi, Gary. Great to be here.
So gold. Right now, we're looking at gold. This is around $1,200. It was over $1,300 two months ago. It's taken a hit. It was almost at 2,000 back in 2011. It's basically been a market, the equivalent of watching paint dry, except the paint was the wrong color that you put on the wall, and you really don't feel like going over it again. I mean, it's just not been much happening in the precious metals markets. Not good anyway.
Yes. Well, one of the funniest things of the last 5 years or so is just in what a narrow range the dollar gold price has varied. And it led to a certain amount of scratching of heads recently that maybe is the Fed on sort of a shadow gold standard, because it works whether you, if the dollar's value is stabilized versus gold. It works whether it's a hard fix, $35 an ounce, or if it's loose, right? If it varies between 33 and 38 or 1100 and 1300, it's not as good as being a hard fix, of course, but it accomplishes many of the same objectives. I think there were a lot of people sort of in the broader conservative area, Republican thought leaders and so forth, who recognized that the big move in gold from under 300 in 2001 to momentarily over 1900 in 2011, represented a decline in dollar value, a pretty shocking one, actually, which was reflected in all kinds of statistics, dollar's value versus euro, commodities, copper went from 80 cents to $4. All this stuff was going on. And I think, someone panicked. Mm-hmm. No one said anything, really, but it kind of looks like maybe that is what's been going on for the last couple of years. And I would remind also that Alan Greenspan was fairly outspoken, or has become a fairly outspoken gold standard advocate. And he said during the 90s very explicitly that, yeah, he was, targeting gold, trying to keep the dollar value versus gold in a fairly tight band. And also during the Volcker era, Volcker was less of a gold fan than Greenspan, but after the so-called monetarist experiment blew up in 1982, and Volcker realized that monetarism was simply not something that anyone could practically do, they went to sort of a commodities gold. It's fairly loose. If you look at the history of that time, commodities prices are all up and down all over the place. But they didn't. But they were within an established range. They didn't just go trending in one direction or the other. So, mm-hmm. The point being, this long explanation is the idea that if we can't have a formal gold standard, then we can have an informal one, a crude one to save our bacon, right?
Yeah.
It's been around a long time. It was there in the 80s, it was there in the 90s. When Bernanke was coming in the 2000s, we sort of forgot about it, and the dollar took a big pratfall, basically. And I sense that we're going back. We went back to the wisdom of the 80s, 90s to some degree. It's hard for me to say to what degree, but the extraordinary stability of the dollar versus gold over the last few years, I don't think can happen strictly out of random chance.
Mm-hmm. So is it manipulating the price of gold or controlling the dollar to be in tune with the price of gold?
Well, ideally what you have is a free market in gold, in large bullion for immediate delivery and large size, billion dollar size. And then you manage the value of the dollar so that it maintains an equivalent value of gold. It's just like a currency board, right? If the Hong Kong dollar is linked to the US dollar, Hong Kong's not manipulating the value of the US dollar, right? That's not going on. What they're doing is they're managing the value of the Hong Kong dollar so that it maintains its parity with the US dollar. Well, that's how the gold standard is supposed to work. You're supposed to manage the value of the US dollar so that it maintains its parity with gold. You're not trying to, manipulate gold.
Mm-hmm.
But ideally, that's what you're supposed to do, and that's the way it was done in the 19th century, more or less. The way things are today, when there's issues with all the paper gold markets, the COMEX and the LBMA, and all these rumors flying around about funny things going on, and it's hard to say what's really going on here. Whatever's coming out of it, they're kind of everything's being manipulated these days, right? Mm-hmm. To some degree, it seems to me, and many people share that view.
Absolutely.
And it's hard to say exactly what's going on here, but it sort of works anyway, right? As long as even if it's manipulated, even if it's a paper price rather than a real price, so to speak, even if it's nothing, unsustainable. Nevertheless, in the broad picture, over the last several years, we haven't had any real obvious monetary problems. We haven't had anything that is obviously blowing up.
Not in the U.S.
So in a sense, even though it might be extremely artificially produced, in the very broadest terms, we do seem to have achieved our goals of, the ultimate goal of gold standard, which is, some form of monetary stability. Whether it's sustainable, when a lot of these things started to happen in 2013, everyone's like, what's up, the physical market and the paper market have, reached this weird schism. I wouldn't have guessed that it would be when they've been able to be maintained for very long, but now here we are, and who knows, right? A lot of questions there. I can't really, no definitive answers for B.
Yeah, I understand that. So what about this concept here of the East accumulating gold and supposedly the West pretty much selling off their gold? What are the long-term ramifications of that?
Well, it's pretty clear. I think those reports are broadly accurate. What the quantities are, maybe no one is certain. But I think those reports are broadly accurate that the big physical vaults of the West are being drained or have been drained.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty clear, I think, that China and Russia and others like-minded governments have always, China also has a tradition of gold and silver based mining going back thousands of years, just like Europe does, and of course Russia does too, and being basically the eastern portion of Europe, and their intellectual traditions are different than ours, right? We consider discussion about monetary policy and gold and so forth, it's really just the English language discussion, right? And so we're talking about U.S., Britain, Canada, New Zealand, basically, right?
Mm-hmm.
What do Germans think about gold? Well, we don't really know because they don't read German, right? What do the French people think about it? Well, what do the Chinese people think about it? Well, I can tell you one thing is I was at a Cato event I wasn't a speaker. I was just attending. And I was just, sort of milling around in the reception area with a drink in my hand. And this Chinese guy comes up and talks to me. He's like, I know who you are and blah, blah, blah. And And he turned out to be like this honcho from the bank, you know, the People's Bank of China, a major like, you know, a researcher, part of the policy board and so forth. Yeah. And he knew where I was by sight, right?
Amazing.
So people in China are onto these things. Mm-hmm. I participated in a documentary of monetary topics in China that was produced by the largest television station in China, State Owned Television. So they're over there, they're educating the people with state television. Over here, we get propaganda.
Yeah.
So the point being is that their views about this stuff is probably a lot like the views of listeners here, but more widely held. And where it goes, it's hard to say where it goes. They probably don't know themselves, but they're making preparations for a number of contingencies.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a suspicion that the West, not the West financial system, will more or less blow itself up at some point. And we've heard these stories for years, and they haven't come true for the most part. But whether it's kind of like the derivatives insanity at the big banks, or the tendency of most developed Western governments to be in over their heads in terms of government debt and entitlement commitments and just sort of political weakness, inability to deal with these issues.
Mm-hmm.
They look at this and they say, well, you know, when governments get themselves in those kind of situations, usually the first thing that goes is not one of the first things, but eventually what goes is the currency too, right?
Mm-hmm.
And and we've already seen years of governments printing money basically to fund deficits and fix the sovereign bond markets and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. So it's already kind of happening. So I think that, you know, it's, I wouldn't look at it as an aggressive thing, like they're trying to kick out the West, but it's more like self-preservation, right? Like when those guys go down, we better have an alternative
plan B.
Of approach.
Yeah, you got to have a plan B. So
yeah, they need to have plan B because, for example, as they're well aware, when the U.S. went kerflooey in 1971 and failed to manage the dollar but correctly, it took down everybody, right?
Yeah,
it wasn't. Yeah. So Chinese look at that. It's like, well, we don't want to be a part of that. Yeah. If something like that's going to happen again, we want to have some kind of alternative up and ready to go. So I think that's all that's going on.
So there's insurance policy.
Yeah. So I wouldn't look at it as an aggressive thing. And if there is a future China, Russia, India, et cetera, gold block, it doesn't mean disaster for the United States, right? Necessarily. When the U.S., the dollar supplanted Britain as the world's premier international currency, you didn't have hyperinflation in Britain, right? The British pound did have many devaluations, which is why people said, sorry, we're not interested in British pounds anymore. But it doesn't mean that the U.S., that's not like we're losing a world war or something like that, right? these kind of metaphors of conflict. It just means that quarantine, basically, right? It's like, well, you just got to suffer your own problems by yourself, right?
Right.
Kind of thing, I think.
Mm-hmm. I see what you're saying. So long term, we're going to see gold, do you think, go up? Because the system does seem to have problems. I mean, we've got what's going on now. Developing countries' currencies imploding is like,
yes,
it's a contagion, I think, and it could very well reach the developed world. It's kind of like the last time, the last disaster in 2008-2009, what happened?
Right.
It started in the U.S. and minor, relatively controllable, minor subprime mortgage market, and then it became a contagion that engulfed the entire world. Are we going to see something like that again, or is it manageable?
Certainly. One thing I have to say about the current period is I've had many years of research into economic history and some of these, you know, booms and crashes kind of stuff over history. And bringing to that the perspective of someone who has worked on Wall Street, right, and has managed money and so forth, which most economists haven't.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say, based on all my historical readings and so forth, that it's very hard to find any historical analog to what we have today. Right? Things at the same time seem so crazy, and at the other hand, seem so placid, right?
Yeah.
By all indications, U.S. economy doing quite well.
Mm-hmm.
And there are other things that look like they might blow up, but they kind of stubbornly refuse to for a long time. So, but to get back to some of your points, what's going to happen, or what might happen? I think the 1998 series of crises and the 2008 series of crises do have some interesting elements, which I think we might see again. And one of them was not a dollar decline, but a dollar rise. In 1998, we saw the dollar go from 380 or so per ounce at the beginning of 97 to 70 or 280 or so in 1998. And that dollar rise was accompanied by emerging market blowups across the world.
Right.
And which led to the LTCM debacle, which is, you know, had financial ramifications, sovereign defaults in Russia, and many things. And then that was U.S. sourced in the sense that it was the U.S. dollar that was rising, but it wasn't, you know, there weren't really a lot of financial problems in the U.S. leading into it. Now then in 2008, we did have these, you know, financial issues, all this, you know, all these loans that really shouldn't have been made and derivatives silliness. And that was the heart of the crisis. But then as the crisis developed, in about, you know, in basically the second half of 2008, again, we had a big dollar rise. Dollar went from $1,000 per ounce of gold all the way to $700 the space of 2 months, right, or whatever it was, 3 months, and also rode against foreign currencies across the board. And again, you had, so again, this dollar rise, you had emerging market currencies blow up across the board, which introduced this new element of monetary chaos, right? Because all these currency pegs were breaking. And then financial chaos, because all of these, let's say, German banks who made a loan to Slovakia, or not in Slovakia, but Ukraine.
Sure.
Because the Ukraine government had an overt policy of maintaining a stable exchange rate and had successfully done so for a number of years. And then, you know, then the currency peg blows up, and then their German bank has huge losses. And then, you know, and you have that kind of financial problem too.
Right.
So that was happening there. And there was another interesting example that I would make note of is Japan in the late 80s, when the yen went from 260 yen per dollar to about 100 in the late 80s, another currency rise scenario. So the point being is that we're starting to see that again, and we're starting to see it very early. The dollar has risen, but it hasn't risen very much, right?
True.
And even despite that, everything's blowing up, right? All this emerging market stuff is kind of going up in flames. And there's a very much like this, I sense I wouldn't call it a herd mentality, but I've seen this before mentality among big institutional investors, you know, hedge fund types, and but not just hedge fund people, but all kinds of people.
Sure.
Who've seen, yep, when the dollar rises, like bail out of emerging markets, right? Before everyone else does, kind of response going on. And at the same time, there's domestic problems throughout Europe, in terms of banks and in terms of sovereign debt and so forth. One of the points here is that in the environment of crisis, big institutional money doesn't go to gold. They can't own gold, right? And basically almost at all. And they should, but they should be able to, but they can't. And they can't. So what they pile into is basically dollars. So these crisis kind of situations, I think it was definitely true in 2008, can produce a big dollar rise. One of the funny things, if you look back in history, the British pound, at the outbreak of World War I, the British pound, this so-called gold window closed on the British pound, right? So the British pound became a floating currency, divorced from gold. Its value actually went up. You know, it went up a good 10 or 15% or so from its previous gold parity, because when there was war on the continent and everyone was scrambling to safety, they piled into British pounds.
Right. Yeah, which is really logical.
Oddly enough.
It's very logical when you think about it, that the capital is going to flee to its safest perceived alternative within reason, and convenience as a factor. Europe's a small continent when you get down to it, with a lot of people in it, and British banks appear to be, you know, again, the best best looking horse in the glue factory there. So, yeah.
Yeah.
you know.
Yes, and if you want to get a little more of a technical level, if you're going to own dollars, you're going to own basically one of two things. You're going to own liabilities of banks.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, big institutional money is not stupid enough to see that there's some danger there, right?
Yeah.
Or you're going to own one way or the other deposits at the Fed, right? Mm-hmm. Cash at the Fed, base money,
right,
which is, you know, not going to default. So it naturally produces a increase in demand for deposits at the Fed via some intermediary, right? Via some European bank, which has a U.S. division, which is a member of the Federal Reserve System and so forth.
Right.
At the same time, we have sort of a cap on supply because the Federal Reserve more or less has a policy of not allowing the monetary base to increase anymore. And in fact, it's kind of, you know, running it off slowly, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so they have the potential confluence of an increase in demand with a limited supply, and that, which is exactly what happened in 2008, when everyone was scrambling for cash, it drove the dollar up, and the issue was resolved when the monetary base was expanded dramatically, you know, by multiples basically, and later in 2008, and then the value of the dollar sank back to more or less where it began. So even from kind of a technical perspective, there's suggests that we might be in a dollar rise period if things like some of the banking default jitters in Europe or the emerging markets crisis continues.
Yeah.
But at some point something's going to happen, right?
Yeah.
For one thing, whether people take gold gear seriously or not, it's going to be broadly understood that the dollar is in fact, you know, rising in value if it rises a lot, right? If it goes up 20-30%, again,
of course.
The turn, they're going to say, you know what, this is not such a good thing, and someone's going to step up and someone's going to do something about it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that would probably be a pretty nice time to own some gold. Part of the question is, you know, what's the magnitude of this going to be? If we're going to go to 900 on gold if the dollar rises, well, that might be a tradable event from where we are now, right? Mm-hmm. Pretty big move. If we're going to go to 1100 from 1200. Well, I don't know. Are you really going to trade that, you know, 8% move? So,
yeah,
it's hard to say what might happen there. I do think that we appear to be in a broader, multi-year crisis era in which all these things where they're kind of, you know, trying to paper over and so forth are not going to, you know, they're going to come to a resolution, I think. And in that resolution, gold might be the last thing standing. Even if the dollar doesn't become worthless or whatever, even if the dollar goes up in value, well, even if the dollar goes up in value, but you own $10 million in, you know, ABC Bank, which goes bust or something, well, where does that leave you? Right. Or you own even US government bonds, right. You own 90-day treasury bills Well, they become 30-year zero coupon bonds, right? At a 2% interest rate, or something, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which means their market value goes down by 70% or something like that. Where does that leave you, right?
Good question.
So even if the so-called price of gold doesn't necessarily go to 10,000 or 10 billion or whatever, it might be a nice environment to own gold.
Yeah, and I think we'll have to kind of cut it off at that, Nathan, but it's fascinating.
Okay.
Fascinating to think, and I see you've really spent a lot of time considering the alternatives, like so many of you out there. And, you know, the future is always uncertain. What did Yogi Berra say? Prediction is very hard, especially about the future. And that's kind of the situation we're in. Hey, if we want to find out more about you, check out your writings, where is the best place to go to find you?
My website is newworldeconomics.com. It's most of my writings about economic topics. It's not really about investing per se.
Mm-hmm.
But I wrote took me over 20 years of research, wrote a 3-volume trilogy about gold standard issues, which I hope will serve as a resource for whatever comes out of this crisis period, because everyone's focused on, oh, this be this crisis and that crisis, the other crisis.
Yeah.
But I focused on, well, what happens afterwards?
Yeah, that's the important thing.
You got to know what you're going to do when the time comes to fix it. you got to have some plans on the shelf.
Absolutely. Agreed.
I just stand around and think, yes.
Well, so what do we do
that,
now?
That's kind of been my focus.
All right. Well, solutions are always preferable to just talking about problems. No solutions come when you just talk about problems. You have to go beyond the problem and come up with what do you do next? What's plan A, B, and C? All those things you need to think about, whether it's the government, whether it's towns, municipalities, or whether it's yourself and your family, always helps to have plans. Even if they don't work out right, at least you've given it thought and you have a better idea of what to do than others. Hey, so as always, we urge you to participate in the show. Send us an email, and the Twitter feed's at Carrie Lutz, the Facebook page, Financial Survival Network. Nathan, been a pleasure speaking with you. We will definitely talk to you again.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.